Happy New Year, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Champagne and Chicken Wings edition, as we look back at a miraculous season-ending win over Baltimore that knocked the Ravens out of the playoffs and clinched a spot for Buffalo, helping the Bills end an 18-year playoff drought, the longest in the four major sports. Coming up, you'll hear radio replays from the win, locker room interviews with all of the key players, and Dave Lapham will join me for post-game analysis. Plus, as the Bengals' 50th season comes to an end, we'll visit with the team's all-time record holder in two categories, most receptions in a season and longest last name. All of that is coming up, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. It's the greatest invention since the TV screen on the seat in front of you on an airplane. Amazing, right? Although, having said that, I would gladly trade it for more legroom. All right, let's get to the game. Way back in week one, the Bengals opened the season against Baltimore with an offensive performance that was so feeble that it set the stage for offensive coordinator Ken Zampezi to be fired one game later. The Bengals' first five possessions of the year went punt, interception, interception, punt, interception, and they got shut out in a 20-0 loss. In Sunday's rematch at M&T Bank Stadium, the Bengals started the game at their own 22-yard line and promptly marched right down the field.
Dalton takes the snap, hands it off. Mixon running for the first down and more. He's to the 20 and goes down at the 18-yard line. He knocked the helmet off of Weddle as he was coming in to make the tackle.
Joe Mixon finished with 96 yards on 18 carries and playing behind a makeshift line for the second straight week. Cincinnati ran for 146 yards after going for 142 against the Lions. In the final 2 weeks, their per-game rushing average went from 77 yards to 85.4. Still the worst average in team history. The 95 Bengals averaged 89.9. In any case, here's how the opening drive ended.
On first and goal from the one, Uzama goes in motion. Dalton looks to throw.
Got him.
For Croft. Touchdown in the back right corner of the end zone as the Bengals do on their opening drive what they could not do in the opening game. They go right down the field and score a touchdown against Baltimore.
They beat us to open the season. They shut us out. They were talking about shutting us out again. And the offense took the ball first drive right down the field. So that's over right there.
Right.
So we were done with that.
Baltimore, on the other hand, looked abysmal on offense in the first half. After getting one first down on their opening drive, the Ravens had seven straight three and outs.
Flacco back to throw, steps up in the pocket, now throws it deep down the left sideline.
Nice.
Broken up at the last possible second. Will Jackson retreating, showing great recovery speed.
At one point, Joe Flacco threw eight straight incompletions. But as the Ravens have shown all year when their offense is sputtered, there's a great equalizer in football, takeaways.
First and 10 Bengals from their own 21. Dalton hands it off to Joe Mixon, started left, cuts back to the right, fumbles the football as he crossed the 30. The Ravens recover at the 34.
C.J. Mosley forced it and Eric Weddle recovered it. They're both Pro Bowlers this year. And Justin Tucker kicked a field goal to make it 7-3. The Bengals' offense was struggling too. After that opening touchdown, the Bengals finished their next six drives with five punts and the fumble. But midway through the second quarter, the Bengals started moving the ball again.
First and 10, it's a handoff to Giovanni Bernard. Jitterbugs out to the left, turns the corner, picks up the first down and more. He's all the way down to the Baltimore 34-yard line before Tony Jefferson shoves him out of bounds. A 21-yard sprint for Giovanni Bernard.
Gio finished with 52 yards on 10 carries, and the drive ended with Dalton once again finding the other tight end named Tyler.
Third down and goal from the 5. Dalton waiting back at the 10 for the snap. Takes the shotgun snap. Pump fakes. Throws
him
to the back of
Got
the end zone.
Yeah.
Caught
yeah.
by Tyler Croft. His second touchdown catch of the game, and the Bengals have taken a 13-3 lead pending the extra point.
Croft finished the year with seven touchdown catches, all in the red zone, tied for fourth best in the NFL. With less than a minute to go in the half, it looked like the Bengals would head to the locker room with a 14-point lead.
32-yard field goal attempt for Randy Bullock. He made four field goals last week. This kick is up, and it is good.
Yes.
And the Bengals have taken a two-touchdown lead with 23 seconds left in the half.
23 seconds. I don't know if I can say the ingredients of a Big Mac backward in 23 seconds. Let's see. Bun, seed, sesame, onions, pickles, cheese, lettuce, sauce, special patties, beef all too. Okay, that took about 6 seconds, so I guess 23 seconds is plenty of time for the Ravens to score a touchdown.
Bullock's kickoff taken on the run, leaping catch by Moore at the 7, sprints to the 20, 25, breaks a tackle at the 30, off to the races at the 50, being chased toward the sideline at the 30, down to the 20, and the Bengals tackle Chris Moore at the 5-yard line with 8 seconds left in the half. An 89-yard return by the former UC Bearcat, Chris Moore. Flacco takes the shotgun snap, throws over the middle, touchdown Baltimore.
Wow.
And it's Chris Moore on the catch.
Yeah.
Give the Ravens credit. Despite a miserable half, they were still only down by 7 points.
We started talking about that on Wednesday when they came back to work. This was going to be a grind today. And so to get mentally prepared to grind it out, because it was going to be a grind for 60 minutes and to leave everything you had out there. I told him that's what it was going to take today. Leave everything you got out on the field.
Darquez Dennard got the message.
Flacco in the shotgun, waiting back at the 27-yard line. Fakes a jet sweep. His pass, caught by Chris Moore, bobbles it, loses it, and it's intercepted by Cincinnati. Darquez Dennard sprinting back to the 30, the 40, down the far sideline to the 50, weaves to the 30, down to the 25-20, following a convoy to the 10, the 5, touchdown!
Wow.
Darquez Dennard goes 90 yards after Chris Moore bobbled the ball and lost it. Darquez Dennard snatches it and takes it to the house.
Could you tell pretty early on with that convoy forming that you might have a nice clear path to the end zone?
Yeah, when I caught it and I turned around, I just seen Joe and then I seen Dre running. I was like, oh, cool. So then, you know, running, and then I see it while I'm running on the screen. So I was weaving and I kind of see the blockers and I hear Dre talking. So, you know, they kind of let me to score, so it was pretty cool.
The Bengals' lead was 24-10, but the Ravens started consistently moving the ball in the second half, mostly with short passes over the middle against the Bengals' injury-ravaged linebacking core. Midway through the third quarter, Baltimore drove to the Bengals' 17 and decided to go for it on fourth down and 3.
Flacco with a pitch to the left. Collins
finish
in trouble.
It. Cutting
back.
No,
trying to run to the opposite side of the field.
Man.
Collins has the first down. He's at the 10, the 5, touchdown.
Jeez.
What a run by Collins. Looked like it was going to be a loss of several yards. He completely reversed direction, ran around to the opposite side of the field, and takes it 17 yards for a touchdown.
Heck of a run by Alex Collins, reminiscent of some of his maneuvers in high school lacrosse. I'm serious. Check it out on YouTube. He terrorized his high school opponents. At that point, drama was building in two cities, Baltimore and Buffalo. Since the Ravens were losing and the Bills and Tennessee Titans were both winning, it was becoming obvious that the Ravens were going to have to win to make the playoffs. If they didn't, the Bills would squeak in with a win. Down by 7, heading to the fourth quarter, Baltimore delivered. First, it was Justin Tucker.
The most accurate kicker in NFL history, the only one better than 90% for his career. His kick is perfect, and it's a 4-point game with 13:08 to go.
And then it was Joe Flacco.
He's back at the 11 and takes the shotgun snap. Fires out to the right, caught by Wallace. Touchdown, Baltimore, and the Ravens have the lead for the first time all day.
27-24 Ravens. The crowd in Baltimore wasn't big, but it was noisy, and things weren't looking good for the Bengals as time ticked away.
Dalton claps his hands, takes the shotgun snap. Blitz coming, and he is hammered.
Whoa.
A big-time sack back at the 20-yard line by Matthew Judon.
Woo, man.
The Ravens had scored on 3 straight possessions when they got the ball with 6.5 minutes to go. At that point, it seemed like the Bengals' medical staff was checking out an injured defensive player on every other snap. Here are George Iloka and Vinny Ray.
And guys are, like, legitimately hurt with, like, big-time injuries. And I'm battling a shoulder separation. Other guys are battling, like, crazy injuries, but you know, we looked around and we were thin. And guys sucked it up. For what? For the love of the game.
Ooh, it was physical, man. That's a physical team. It's an AFC North game. It was probably, I think wind chill was like single digits. So it was a cold game. We're out there on the field. You know, we were doing a great job to start the game, but then they started gaining momentum, running the ball on us. That's a real good running back right there. Real good blockers, but, you know, we were able to sustain and win.
The defense forced the Ravens to punt, and the Bengals took over at their own 10 with 2:43 to go. To that point, the Bengals had one first down in the second half. But thanks in part to a pair of huge penalties on the Ravens, Cincinnati drove to the Baltimore 49, where the Bengals had to go for it on 4th and 12 with 53 seconds to go.
4th down and 12 at the Ravens 49. Dalton waiting for the shotgun snap. Now Uzama moves into the slot. Dalton catches the football. He's back to throw. Inches up in the pocket. Throws.
Yeah.
Caught by Boyd.
Get in.
To the 15.
Get in.
The 10.
Yeah.
The 5. Touchdown. Tyler Boyd.
Man.
On 4th and 12.
Man.
It's a 49-yard touchdown.
Ooh, baby.
And the Bengals lead with 44 seconds to go.
Stunned silence in Baltimore and pandemonium in Buffalo. Here's Lapp with Andy Dalton and Tyler Boyd.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great play. We, you know, obviously at that point in the game, you have to make a play, and Tyler did a great job of getting open. Line did a great job of giving me time, and I mean, what a way to end the season.
So you not only make a great catch, you get north and south in a heartbeat, man, and you split those two defenders. When did you know you were taking it to the house?
Once I felt like I split them. Once I felt like I got through them, you know, and guy was on my back and he felt them come off and I knew I was in after that. You know, all I wanted to do after the catch was just score, you know, try anything I could just to get in the end zone.
The Ravens got the ball back with 38 seconds to go, but ran out of miracles.
Ravens need 14 yards to keep their season alive. Flacco back to throw. He's going to fire. It is caught at the 30 by Watson. He needs to get to the 37.
No.
He does not.
No.
And the Cincinnati Bengals have done it for the second consecutive week. They knocked the Lions out of the playoffs last week. They knocked the Ravens out of the playoffs this week.
How about that? How about that?
The final score, Cincinnati 31, Baltimore 27. Here's Darquez Dennard.
Describe the feeling in the locker room right now.
I think everybody just enjoy. Of course, we down about the season we had, but you know, the last 2 weeks we came out and played ball, offense, defense, and special teams, and you know, we went out there and fought. And I think, you know, this just sums up what type of team we could have had. And you know, we're just gonna roll on to a new year and basically, you know, get back to work and you know, come back next year hungry, humble and hungry, and you know, pretty much, you know, new focus on the season.
We're talking to Darquez Dennard. There almost seems to be a little melancholy in your voice, like you realize how much better it could have been.
Definitely, man. You know, we, you know, injuries, of course, that comes into play, and you know, we didn't play ball like we should have played ball. You know, we got a lot of talented guys in the room, in this locker room, man, and of course, the season didn't go like we all felt. I think everybody in here know what type of team we have and what we could have did, and it's just kind of frustrating.
I spoke to George Iloka about knocking the Lions and Ravens out of the playoffs in the final 2 weeks.
I think that speaks to Marvin, that that he was able to, you know, keep the team motivated and give us things to reach for. I mean, a lot of guys are self-motivated, but still it falls on the head coach as well. And you saw how we came out these last 2 weeks, win or loss. Like, I'm not even just speaking on just because we won, but it just felt different the way guys came out. It was just a different kind of energy. And I told you, like, midway, fourth quarter, last game against Detroit, it was real neck and neck. I was like, whether we lose or win, I was just like, man, it feels good just looking around, the feeling and like how guys are playing, flying around, and everybody's real juiced up. I think that says a lot about him, because some teams throw it in like ain't nothing to play for, and that's that. But we didn't do that these last 2 weeks.
And that leads to an obvious final question. Was it Marvin Lewis's 247th and final game as the Bengals head coach? Here are Iloka, Vinnie Ray, and Darquez Dennard.
We don't know Marvin's fate. If this turns out to be his final game, were you proud to send him off that way?
I was happy. You know, he means a lot to me. He's the only coach I've ever known in terms of professionally. He's the longest coach that I've ever, you know, played for, really, because high school is 4 years, college is 4 years, and for me, this is 6 years with him. So obviously there's some attachment there. But whatever he does or decides to do, I hope he makes the best decision for himself. I'm happy about the time we've spent together. I'm appreciative of all the things he's taught me and, you know, always riding me and things like that. And, yeah, I'm definitely happy that we can send him off this way versus a loss.
I think he'll be back. You know, I personally think he should be back as our coach. You know, I've heard some I've been in the city for a while now, you know, and I've have my ear to the streets, so to speak. But I've heard some people say who've lived here their whole lives that, you know, these are some of the best years that we've had under Coach Lewis, as Cincinnatians, you know. So, but aside from that, you know, he's the coach who brought me in, you know, and I appreciate that, and I've learned so much from him. He's a head coach, but at the end of the day, he coaches the linebackers too, you know. So he's like another linebacker coach. I get a lot of little tidbits from him, and I'm thankful for it.
You know, Coach Lewis drafted me. He believed in me when nobody else did, and I think a lot of guys feel the same way. So it's definitely the right way to send him out. Just shows you, you know, what type of a guy he is and how he motivated us, you know, these last few weeks and challenged us. We came out to play. So, I mean, it's definitely – this win is for him for sure.
The Bengals finished the season 7-9. No playoff berth, no shot at the Lombardi Trophy, but hey, they do have some chicken wings to look forward to, courtesy of the Buffalo Bills, who tweeted after the game that they are sending authentic wings to Cincinnati as a thank you. I imagine they'll be coming from the Anchor Bar, where Buffalo-style chicken wings were supposedly invented, and where I have probably taken several years off of my life with late-night, unhealthy gluttony. Time to bring in my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham, for post-game analysis. The only people happier than the people in the locker room behind us, the entire city of Buffalo, right, and folks back in Western New York, because the Bengals not only knocked the Ravens out of the playoffs, they put the Buffalo Bills in, ending the longest streak in the four major sports of not going to the playoffs as Buffalo gets in.
And really, all Marvin Lewis cares about is winning the football game. I talked to him about that. It's like, boy, you knocked Detroit out and you knocked Baltimore out. He said, yeah, I feel bad because I didn't realize in both cases, you know, I go up to the coach after the game and say, good luck the rest of the way, you know, and it's like, oh, man, he didn't realize that Baltimore was eliminated. So it's pretty remarkable when you look at it. Pride won. You know, they were playing for the playoffs, that P. The Bengals were playing for Pride, that P, and Pride won. It's incredible. I think it's a testament to the all-in mentality of the players. So many guys played so hurt. I mean, not just little bumps and bruises. I'm talking about major injuries. Yeah. And sucked it up and played through that football game. Eric Winston's in a walking cast at the conclusion of the game. Vinny Ray, what he did. George Iloka, Sean Williams. All these guys were playing with real serious problems. And wouldn't leave the game. I mean, or would leave the game, but then would come back into the football game. Said during the broadcast, you know, you got to knock them out. TKO ain't happening. They're not going to take a standing 10 count. I mean, you have to knock them out, period. And they kept battling. It was incredible to see.
4th and 12, less than a minute to go, the season on the line. Andy Dalton finds Tyler Boyd for a 49-yard touchdown that wins it. I believe that is the first game-winning touchdown pass in the last minute of a game in Andy Dalton's career.
I think you might be right about that. And he was very not subdued, but he was understated in his celebratory state after the football game. Marvin Lewis was right next to Andy when we were talking, finished talking to Andy, and then Marvin right away, and he said Andy did an unbelievable job of checking, making Baltimore get into something different, and then checking again. I mean, he said he orchestrated it perfectly. He knew exactly where he wanted to go, how he wanted to go there, manipulated them defensively to do it. And then when Tyler Boyd split the defenders, everybody knew that was what it was going to be about. Andy said, I was just hoping he'd, you know, break a tackle. Somebody would miss a tackle. I said, so when you saw them, you saw him split those safeties, he goes, I was like, oh, my gosh, it's going to go to the house.
Players are obviously very happy about the win, but I also detected a little note of melancholy in that it kind of reinforced how much better this season could have been.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, it's a shame, really, when you look at it. You can pick out a few games. You can pick out Green Bay. You can pick out Houston. You can pick out others. I mean, there's a few
Pittsburgh.
Of them. Pittsburgh, yeah. For half of that game, they were world beaters, and the other half not. I mean, Bottom line is turnovers did them in, you know? I mean, the reason Baltimore was even in contention was because they were so plus 17 coming into this football game. But once again, I mean, it was even the turnover ratio. Marvin Lewis, if they don't lose the turnover battle with Marvin Lewis as the head coach, they're 16-2 against the Baltimore Ravens. That's pretty impressive. And I think that kind of is the storyline of the season. Turned it over too many times in key situations and too many big lulls offensively. I mean, it was just too inconsistent. But, hey, down the stretch, they put it together and put together 8 good quarters of football against Detroit and Baltimore.
And if it was Marvin Lewis's final game as the Bengals head coach, it was his 125th win, 61 more than any other coach in Bengals history. Sam Weich, by the way, is second on the Bengals all-time list. Now to the question of Marvin's future. He met with reporters on Monday afternoon, acknowledged that he talked with Mike Brown that morning, but apparently no decision on Marvin's future has been reached. He did say he doesn't think the process will drag on for much longer.
We haven't talked about a deal or anything that way. We're just talking about the football team. We discussed the football team this morning. There's a lot of things, you know. People have their viewpoints. I have my viewpoint and so forth. So, and again, it's, you know, the one thing that we've been consistent on since I began here is staying on the same page. And I think that's important. You know, there's a direction that the owner wants to have. There's a direction that I have to, he's hired me to do a job, and we got to make sure we stay aligned in that. And if his direction is different than my direction, then it's probably not good. And so we just have to, you know, to make sure we're all on the same page.
Coach, you talked about being on the same page with Mike Brown. Is it your understanding that there is a path that has you as the 16th season here next year?
I think so. But I probably less said the better.
This much is clear. Those reports from several weeks ago that Marvin had decided to pursue other opportunities were clearly premature. Time to change subjects. Throughout this year, we've been celebrating the Bengals' 50th season by talking to the greatest players in franchise history. And last Friday on the Bengals Pep Rally Show, we were joined by wide receiver T.J. Houshmandzadeh, who came in at number 27 on the list of the top 50 retired players in Bengals history.
T.J., great to have you on the show. We didn't get to visit with you on the radio when you were back for that Houston game, along with Chad Johnson, Tekeo Spikes, and others. How was the experience?
It was pretty good. I enjoyed myself, my family. We had a good time. It was a really good experience.
Was it almost like a mini reunion as such? I know a lot of guys, you know, they came back to see teammates that they play with in their specific eras, like in the 70s. Guys came back to see teammates that played the mid-70s to the early 80s. And did you kind of look at it almost as a mini reunion as such?
Well, somewhat. You know, it's funny because the guys that I was there with, we stay in touch here and there anyway. So, you know,
right.
Before the reunion, you know, I stay in touch with Chad, with Tekeo Spikes. I didn't really stay in touch with Corey Mays, but to get a chance to see him, it was good. And then being in Cincinnati, I had never been on social media at all. And while we're there, Chad started an Instagram page for me. So now I'm on social media, so I keep in contact with more guys that I've played with because of that.
There you go.
There you go. We're talking to T.J. Houshmandzadeh. T.J., as you know, there's a lot of speculation that this is going to be Marvin Lewis's final game as the Bengals head coach. You got here pre-Marvin. You had a couple of years under Dick LeBeau before Marvin took over in 2003. What did Marvin do, from your perspective, to change the Bengals' fortunes?
How much time we got? So I just speak from experience, you know, and I'm going to probably be a little long-winded, honestly. Just for me personally, I'm appreciative of everything Marvin did for me. And it's not just Marvin. It was the Browns, too, because and a guy that I'm going to give credit to, Lap will remember this name, and others will, too, would be Lippincott.
Sure.
I know he was in my corner. I know he stood by me because I was hurt a lot early on. And when Marvin got there, I was hurt. And it's very rare that a seventh-round draft pick can be hurt 2 years in a row without getting cut. And so when Marvin came in, I was hurt, but I think he saw the potential. And just giving me an opportunity to play, giving me an opportunity to be myself. I like to think of myself as a quiet guy, but once competition starts, I'm uncontrollable, so to speak. And I think people took that the wrong way. I don't mean anything. I'm just ultra competitive. I don't like to lose it. Me and I got a son 3 years old. We play matching games with cards. I beat him every time, and he cries, and I don't care. And that's just me. Marvin changed the culture of the Bengals. And I've said this before. You know this. Before Marvin got there, we didn't even have Gatorade or water in the locker room. We didn't have that.
You're right.
Marvin came. I mean, he changed. So we're not even talking football. Things that people don't even think matters. It matters to people, and it matters to guys and teams, especially guys coming from other teams. And he just changed the culture. We didn't stay in hotel rooms before home games. Quick story. My second year, and I'm not going to tell you who it is. My second year, one of my teammates got arrested Sunday morning, Saturday night, because we didn't stay in hotel rooms. So he was out. I get a call at 2:30 in the morning from his agent. TJ, what you doing? Sleep. It's 2:30. So-and-so just got arrested. Can you go bail him out? I go bail him out. They release him at 7 or 8 o'clock. We go get food and go straight to Paul Brown Stadium. That's how bad it was. We weren't even in a hotel. We were staying at home. And if he's listening to this, he knows who he is. He never gave me my money back for bailing him out, by the way. But he just changed the culture. He helps you grow as a man outside of football. And if he has to go, and if he does go, I hope Cincinnati appreciates what he's done, because he's done a lot for the community. He's never disrespected the Bengals and the NFL and the city of Cincinnati. He's done a lot, and he did a lot for myself and the other guys that he's coached. And if this is it for Marvin, I think he's done a hell of a job, and he can leave with his head held high because he left the Bengals in a much better position than when he got there.
Yeah, there's no question about that. TJ, you came to camp and were working with receivers, and I thought that was great on your part and your knowledge and your understanding of the game of football. And I know you're extremely high on Tyler Eifert, you know, a big body guy that could run routes like a wide receiver, you know. And not having Tyler Eifert, not having John Ross, as a West Coast guy, you probably saw quite a bit of John Ross. You know, they draft him as the 9th pick overall. When you don't have those kind of weapons available to your offense, how big a deal is it?
When you lose your best players, you're going to suffer. Football, any sport, it's about players. It's about the players. When the players play well, the coaches look good. When they don't, the coaches look like SIT. That's just the reality of it.
Right.
And when I was in Cincinnati and I saw Tyler Eifert, I said, oh, my. I went to Hugh and I said, Hugh, dude, this Tyler Eifert is the best tight end in the league. He's that good. And I told Tyler Eifert this myself. I said, dude, you can be one of the best players to ever play. I don't know if you realize how good you are. And I told him that, and I don't know if it took him by surprise or what, but Tyler Eifert is unreal as a talent. Yeah. John Ross. Let's go to John Ross. I talked with John Ross when he was in high school because a coach of his called me and wanted me to speak with him. So I've been knowing John Ross since he was 17 years old.
Huh.
And, again, it's unfortunate. The NFL is a different animal. You know, guys, you think you're in shape, and you get to the NFL and you realize, I'm not in shape. As a receiver and a DB, you have to run and run and then run more. And it takes guys a while to figure out how to take care of their bodies and get into shape. And that's the thing that I didn't – when I came to Cincinnati, we didn't have veteran leadership. You had to learn that on your own. And A.J. Green, he didn't have veteran leadership. He had to learn that on his own. And so John Ross has that in A.J. Green now. And so he needs to latch on to him or somebody else. Like, John Ross is from L.A. with me. I'm going to reach out to him because I want to see the kid succeed.
Right.
And I'm going to start helping young receivers here this month. I had never done any type of training, but I'm going to start helping them because I feel like, and I'll take this the wrong way, I feel like I know a lot of football. I feel like I'm a very intelligent football player. And it's not just receiver position. And so I want to help these kids. And John Ross is somebody that I would like to help. So I'm going to try to reach out to him to see if he wants it. I'm not going to force my way on him. If he wants to help, I'm going to help him. If not, it is what it is.
That's awesome.
I suspect he will look forward to your help. He strikes me as that kind of kid.
Yep.
TJ Hushmanzada is our guest. We've got time for one more question. Do Steelers fans give you grief still for desecrating a terrible towel?
All the time. Because, you know, just out here in Southern California where I live, man, it's like Steelers fans, they're everywhere, man. You can't shake them. They're everywhere. And all the time, everywhere I go somewhere, they bring that up, and they bring up how I would beat them, and then they bring up how I dropped the ball when I was playing for the Ravens. Just so, you know, I get a little bit of everything. But, you know, as you get older, man, it's all in good fun. When you're playing, you really dislike them. But as you get older and you just watch the game, man, I just want to watch good football and hope everybody stays healthy and safe, man.
Real quick, TJ, Ravens, you mentioned you play with the Ravens. Biggest difference between Ravens or similarity between Ravens and Bengals in your mind? We got to be quick, unfortunately.
Man, I don't like doing comparisons because every time you compare, that means you're putting somebody down. But I will say this. The Ravens, and I, just being honest, top to bottom, one word, phenomenal. Huh. And I was only there a year. And that 1 year, man, it didn't go the way I would have liked, but – outside of football, I have nothing negative to say about Ozzie Newsome, Steve Bisciotti, and Harbaugh. Phenomenal. Love Harbaugh to death, man. Great dude. I enjoyed my time there. I will say that.
Our thanks to TJ Hushmanzada, and here's hoping John Ross takes advantage of his offer to work together in the off season. That's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play, and give it a rating or leave a comment. Your feedback has been very helpful, and 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard. Happy New Year, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.